Welcome to Parents Perspective.
He did it!
5-year-old Timmy shrieked, pointing at his brother Zach.
Did not!
8-year-old Zach yelled back. Well, their dad observed, standing before the broken screen in the back door, someone ripped this screen. The boys glowered at each other. And someone will have to help repair it.
He always blames me, Zach fumed. Little twerp! You told me it would open, Timmy whined. How do I know you were dumb enough to do it?
Zach growled in Timmy's direction. Do what? Asked their dad.
My karate kick, Timmy explained. Zach said ninjas just kick doors open.
Zach rolled his eyes. Timmy's lower lip began to quiver.
He bet me I couldn't.
Their dad frowned at Zach.
Don't look at me, Zach shot back. I didn't do it.
From a parent's perspective, how can we teach our children personal responsibility? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest will help us better understand how we can teach our children to be responsible for the results of their decisions. Dr. Edward Farber is a clinical child psychologist and the managing partner of Reston Psychological Center, a multidisciplinary mental health practice. He is an assistant clinical professor at George Washington University School of Medicine, Department of Pediatrics. Dr. Farber has done research in areas of child development, family conflict resolution, and clinical psychotherapy. He has a broad clinical practice in the area of psychology, but specializes in dealing with families in high conflict. Dr. Farber is the father of two and has been involved as a volunteer for youth sports for a number of years. Welcome to Parents Perspective, Dr. Farber.
Thank you for having me.
What would you say is the most important thing for parents to remember about teaching kids personal responsibility?
Well, I would certainly take Zach, and I would sign him up immediately for some Taekwondo classes at least 5 times a week to help him learn how to use that training appropriately. The story you told is an interesting but true one. All too often, little Zach and little Timmy are getting into it with each other, and all too often, the parents really don't know where to lay the external responsibility. But what's not in that story is little Zach and little Timmy taking ownership for what they have done. Yes, the screen's broken, someone broke the screen, and they've got to learn how to take responsibility for fixing that little screen. Ninjas do that, however, and we do have to keep in perspective that it's only a screen, and there's a valuable lesson to be learned by the parents, by little Zach, and by little Timmy in that story.
When are kids old enough to understand the concepts of being responsible for their own actions and decisions? In this story, we've got an 8-year-old and a 5-year-old.
Well, certainly the 8-year-old and 5-year-old are both very aware of what they've done, and we're going through a charade little play here with Daddy, and Mommy could be equally involved with these two youngsters. But the idea of personal responsibility begins at a very, very early age. If you recall when the babies took the first bite of regular food and decided whether they liked it or didn't like it and spit it out in your face, well, your reaction to that and how you then take the next feeding to that baby certainly plays a role in the development for that child of how he or she is going to deal with future events that they're not so sure about. So are you the parent who at that point says, oh, you don't like that? Are you the parent who says, yay, look at the big spit? Are you the parent?
That's somebody who must have stock in a cleaning company.
Or just the reality. You're both grandparents, and you know what it's like when those little babies, you know, take that first taste of something that they're not really sure of. But how do we teach that child that that spitting behavior somehow impacts somebody else? Well, certainly not at 9 months of age. We don't really expect the baby to have that level of responsibility.
We can't give him a sponge and say, now clean it up.
I wish. But our own response to that, our own ability to be able to say, that's okay, we'll do it again. And then as that child gets a bit older and throws the spoon on the ground, to be able to indicate that that's not really what we want the child to do with the spoon, but we really do want that baby, that toddler, to take that spoon and use it for feeding, not necessarily for throwing. It's okay to explore with that also. But the beginning of the development of personal responsibility comes from those early interactions of parent and child and just grows exponentially from there.
What about backsliding? Are there ages and times when we might expect that?
Always. Most child development is really a series of growths, steps forward, steps backwards. The way we all learn is we assimilate new information. We take it in. There's lots of things that we're learning as we're growing up. Some we then put into categories. They make sense. Some we discard from those categories. They don't make sense. We then experience things in the real world, and we go back into our trash bin, and we pull some of those experiences back out, and we say, wow, this we really need this here. This really does make sense. And then we reanalyze. So learning is always a process of taking in the new information, a few steps forward, and then a step or two backwards. But when we talk about personal responsibility, there are always ages and stages that are really problematic. If we want to talk about the middle school child who's now exploring the world for herself for that first time and is deciding that she's going to bare her midriff and wear that skirt a little shorter than mom really wants her to wear that skirt, well, is she taking some level of personal responsibility as well for her battle that she's about to have with her mother? Yes, she is, because she is now testing a limit and she's establishing a boundary line that she'd like to explore. Will there be some backsliding at that stage of her development as far as education, as far as growth as she goes and tries to battle with her mom? Yes, there probably will be. But throughout development, what we're going to see are steps forward and steps backward in this development of what we're calling personal responsibility. And maybe I could discuss for a few minutes a framework by which people develop this concept of taking responsibility for their own actions. It falls in a couple of different areas. We first have what I'll call a developmental perspective. I have my professor's cap on now, so let me just reach for it, put it on. I'll keep it on for a few minutes, then we'll throw it away. At different stages of life, we certainly expect different things from our children. And as parents, developmentally, we're also going through different stages of life, and we expect our own behaviors to be somewhat different. Behaviors that we will display later on are evident at a very early age. I expect a 3-year-old to explore the world around him. I expect the 6-year-old to be very self-centered. I expect a 12-year-old to be very sure of herself. I expect the 15-year-old to not be quite as sure, but to show the world that she knows everything. I expect the 17- and 18-year-old to now go through a period of re-questioning and exploring who I am, where I am in my stage of development.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on teaching kids to take responsibility for their decisions and their actions.
Washington, D.C. with Kids, an excellent book by authors Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with Dr. Edward Farber about teaching children personal responsibility.
The first question we talk about personal responsibility is, where does this fall out on this broad, broad developmental perspective? The second is really temperamental style. And all I really mean by this is we're all born with very different personalities and very different temperaments. I recall a wonderful story. I was an intern at Bellevue Hospital in New York many years ago, and two brilliant clinicians took a group of very fresh interns and threw them in the newborn nursery. The babies were 3 days old at that time. In those days, it was not drive-by deliveries, and you actually stayed in the hospital for a few days after you gave birth. Threw a pad of paper at us and said, describe what these babies will be at age 21. Well, you know, after picking yourself up from the floor, you look at these babies again for a while, and you really could see the personality styles develop if you watch. You saw the babies who calmly went on a cycle. They would eat and they would sleep and they would Google the world, the old use of Google, the world around them. You would see ones that no matter what you did, the babies just couldn't get satisfied. You would see the babies who really were difficult. They couldn't get in a good position to sleep and they were crying or colicky type even at that age. You would see babies who were very slow to warm up. It took a while to take the feeding. But then they would get there and be satisfied. It took a while to rest, to go to sleep, but then they would get to a peaceful rest. Well, these personality styles very much remain the same throughout our lives. You have adults who are sort of slow to warm up as well, slow in a new situation, but gradually getting appraised of what they are doing and getting there. You have adults who are temperamentally somewhat difficult. We've all dealt with them once or twice in our lives. We have people who get on a pretty routine schedule and like things pretty organized. And these temperamental styles don't change.
That's interesting. So you were able to sort of figure that out as a young intern with babies that were only 3 days old.
Oh, I didn't say I figured it out. They tried to have us do it. But absolutely, there really is this style. And if you think about your own children and have to understand, what is their temperamental pace? Can you run in from work and say to them, do this, do this, do this. Why is the screen door open? Why isn't your homework done yet? Have you practiced piano yet? Or is your child the one who you need to come in and say, hi, how are you? How was your day? Sit down for a moment, take it easy, and then gradually talk about why piano's not done and why homework's not completed and all the tasks of the day that haven't been completed. By having an awareness of the temperamental style of your child, you as a parent can really eliminate a tremendous number of these kinds of conflicts, and with that, understand how your child also will develop the sense of personal responsibility.
Now, where does modeling come in that whole scenario?
Oh, it's a very, very important part, because the last and the third piece of this broad scenario, we have developmental ages and stages of children. We have the temperamental style. And the third piece is really the environmental parenting modeling style. What does the child learn from the world around him or her? Are we the folks who come charging in and demand responsibility? Are we the heroes of our day and look at the media and are concerned about what our heroes of the day do and take responsibility for or not? Do we as adults say, I blew it? It reminds me of a wonderful story I had heard from a child in a clinical session. It was a case where the parents were in the process of divorcing, and this 8-9-year-old child really wanted to understand why. And was really struggling with this issue, and the parents in their strife had actually decided that they weren't going to tell the child anything about what was going on. Daddy's just moving out for a little while. Daddy was going to be on business trips for a bit. Daddy would have his own place for a little bit where the children would see Daddy. And this 8-year-old just turned to me and was actually that day in my office because of some academic failure kinds of issues, but just turned to me and said, well, if they won't tell me the truth, why should I tell you the truth?
Oh, wow. Oh, my.
So that's
caveat for all parents.
So we really have a modeling perspective here. It really starts with little things. Who does homework in your household? Is it the child or the parent? Does the child do chores? How do you acknowledge that chores are done or not done? Does the parent take responsibility for his or her own behavior? Is it the sort of thing that you say, you know, I did blow something. I did tell you that I was going to this weekend stop at the store and get you that blue binder that you must absolutely have. And you know what? I didn't do it. Now, do I say that? Or do I say, you know, I went to the store and they just don't have any blue binders now? And the question becomes one of what kind of a parent am I? Do I want to model for my child this perspective that I'll take responsibility for my own action? I know I told you I'd get to the store this weekend. I got busy. I didn't do it. Or even, I forgot. I am sorry.
What an important model that is.
When my oldest son, who is now 35, was in nursery school, we had our first parent-teacher conference. It's very exciting. My husband took off from work, and we went in for our conference, and the teacher said to us, there is one factor I would like to talk with you about. Your child needs to see that you sometimes fail, that you sometimes make mistakes. And I was sort of stunned. I said, sometimes, you know? And she said, your son thinks that you and your husband are perfect, in quotes, that you never make mistakes, that nothing ever goes wrong. She said, if you burn the toast, you need to say, oh, no, I burned the toast. Give me a few minutes. I'll make you another piece.
No, there's something wrong with the toaster.
That's right. The toaster's fault. You
know? Who set this number up too high?
And that kind of thinking had just not occurred to us. It never seemed that it was important to point out what we did that wasn't right or good or whatever. So we learned an important lesson, I think, exactly what you're describing.
It's interesting. We had someone on this show many years ago who was a very wise preschool teacher. And she said one of the ways that she dealt with the kids on the first day of school, because she knew they were all nervous and concerned about things, was she would sit them down at a big table and have snack. And at the very beginning, after all the kids had their apple juice poured or whatever it was and their cookies and everything, she would then knock over the apple juice and go, "Oh my, I knocked over the juice. I'll just wipe it up." And she said you could hear everybody exhale.
That's a wonderful story.
She'd get the paper towels and she'd clean it up, and the kids were all so relieved.
And she didn't say, "Someone else made me knock it over," or "Someone else must
have
done it.
How dumb of me. Yeah. How stupid, stupid of me," that kind of thing.
You know, as parents, we certainly do want our children to think that what we suggest or tell them is right, and there's a reason why we want them to do certain things, like brush their teeth on a regular basis. And we want them to understand that we may know better than they do. But that's a vastly different perspective than the idea that we are always right. It's very important that we as adults model that behavior and take a level of personal responsibility. If we make a mistake, it's really quite fine to say, "I blew it." It's really okay to develop alternative ways of fixing the problem, of helping the child see what the consequences of taking responsibility might be.
You know, it's wonderful to be able to say, let's teach our children, let's make allowances for their personalities and so forth and figure out what's appropriate. How do we do all this stuff when we're angry? They broke the good pitcher. They messed up the screen, you know. They just had mud tracked all across the carpet because they didn't take off their boots when they came in. And we've told them 1,000 times. How do we do this when we're angry?
You know, in various places when you're 16 or 17, you take a test to learn how to drive a car. But there's really no test that tells us how to be a parent. Mm-hmm. Before you take that test to drive the car, you have to read the manual. There's no manual that you read for how to be
Darn
a parent.
It. With all our kids, however, we wondered why they came without the manuals. Now we know.
Without that manual, page one doesn't say part of raising children is allowing them to make those mistakes and remembering that we ourselves dragged mud on that carpet and broke that window. "Mom, I really didn't do it. It was my older brother who really hit the ball against the window. I swear it really wasn't me," if you're listening.
We have to give them the means of making it right, don't we?
We have to allow them to make those mistakes, and we have to teach them how to make it right.
Mm-hmm. We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on teaching kids to take responsibility for their decisions and their actions.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $10 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Dr. Edward Farber about teaching children personal responsibility. We had moved from a very old house in Massachusetts to a recently built house in the Washington area, which had plasterboard walls, not plaster walls. And my son had been sent to his room in a rage for something that he had done, and he apparently was kicking the walls. And it got very quiet upstairs after a little while. There was no more yelling. There was no more kicking. And he came downstairs with his head hanging, and he said, "Come with me." So I came with him to his room, and there, hanging on the wall, was a piece of tissue. "What's that for?" "Well, I have to show you what happened." And he picked it up, and there's a hole. He's kicked a hole in the wall in his bedroom. And, of course, he thought the house was going to cave in. I'm sure he thought the whole world was going to come to an end. And I said, "Oh, you know," I don't remember exactly what I said, but my reaction was, "We're going to have to get that fixed. It's not something I can fix or you can fix or Daddy can fix. We're going to have to pay someone to fix that." And he, again, I'm sure was visualizing his college education would cover it. And so we had him earning money. We had a little chart where he earned money, and he learned to do things like clean mirrors and clean toilets and things that he was capable of doing. He was probably about six. And he earned money on this chart.
Well, the personal consequences for your behavior is a wonderful way of teaching personal responsibility. We all make a mistake at work. We have to fix it in some manner. Mm-hmm. And if we can't, we have to bring in some mechanism of doing that. The child who makes the mistake in the math problems in school needs to redo those math problems so that she learns how to get it right. And at home, we need that same concept. No one's getting 100% in home behavior. But when we make mistakes, we need to figure out the ways of fixing the mistakes. Now, our jobs as parents are to help teach the children what the problems are, what the alternative possible solutions to those problems are, and then what are the consequences of those choices. So let me give you some examples. We'll go with the broken wall. I like that story. So here your son kicks a hole in the wall. He knows what the problem is now, although his definition of the problem is that the house is going to fall down, or my college fund is going away, or I will never see my friends again as long as I live, and I will be inside my room forever and ever. So as parents, the first thing we really help our children do is define what that problem is. The problem really is that you were angry, and you didn't know another way of getting rid of that anger. So we'll take that behavior and put it into some element of words so they understand really what the issue is. There's also an issue of a hole in the wall, and we'll have to deal with that as well. But the house is not falling down. Then what we want our child to do is really use intellectual skills, thinking skills, to try to figure out ways of solving those problems. So what we do, all toward teaching personal responsibility, is help our child think of what are some ways that we can solve that problem. You now have a hole in the wall. What are some things that we can do to solve that? And as parents, we want our kids to go through a number of possible alternatives. Well, we can call up a plasterer and get an estimate on what it is to fix that. We could go to our local hardware store and take our hard-earned allowance money and buy a little plastering kit and learn how to plaster and learn how to repaint. And from personal experience, let me tell you that most of us can manage to put a patch up on that wall.
We need your number and to know when you're available.
I said we could learn. I didn't say we do that very well. A third choice. Well, we could move our furniture over there and sort of cover up that hole in the wall as a way of solving the problem. A fourth choice, we can say, you know, I never really kicked the hole in the wall. It was there before. I didn't do it. It was there. We could always say, I didn't mean to do it. I was just kicking the wall, and there must have been a problem. It was a bad house. We bought an old house, Mom. Why did you ever make us move here? I don't want to live here anymore. I hate it here. It's all your fault.
And this is a budding actor.
But often, it really diverts the attention, mm-hmm. and it really gets things away from where we want to go. So what we've done now with our child, we've had a couple of good solutions, perhaps a not-so-good solution, perhaps a humorous solution. But now we have to help our children learn, what are the consequences of each of these choices? Where do we go from here? What happens if we call the plasterer in? How expensive is that going to be? Who's going to stay home and wait for this person to come? There are consequences to our behavior. What happens if we go to the local hardware store and learn how to fix a small hole in the wall? And take a Saturday afternoon and plaster that wall and have an activity with the parent that really is a learning activity rather than a punishment activity. What happens if we move the furniture over? Sometimes that's a wonderful solution to the problem. What happens if we blame somebody else? If we say, it's not really my fault, the hole was there. What are the consequences of each of these behaviors? And how do we teach our children to understand that for every problem, there are choices of how they want to solve those problems, and that each of those choices lead to a series of consequences.
Now, how do we deal with a child who wants to blame somebody else, especially young ones who feel like if they could put the blame on somebody else and walk away, that person isn't there, or maybe a grown-up would just feel bad, or a peer who's not around, or something like that?
There are two ways. Clearly, one needs consequences to behaviors. We need to teach our children by consequences. There are positive and negative consequences for positive and negative behaviors. And the second way is by our own responsibility, and the term we used before of modeling, of how we model our own interactions with that child. If the child is blaming others, are we going to engage in a dialogue about that blame? Or are we going to very matter-of-factly say, you put a hole in the wall. You're responsible for repairing it. I know you were mad. I will help you repair it, but it's your responsibility to do those repairs. I will help you. And we model for our child that behavior.
Is this the kind of situation where parents could take advantage of their children's watching television or listening to sports figures or movie stars or politicians being interviewed in the media who may blame somebody else or something else for a problem, or take responsibility themselves and point this out?
I'm a baseball nut, and I used an example of this really with my son not too long ago. One of his heroes, a first baseman for an American League baseball team, had recently testified in front of a Senate committee that he had no involvement with doing any illegal steroids or drugs. And my son was so thrilled he had a signed baseball from this player that he kept prominently up on his bookcase. A few months later, when drug testing found that his hero had, in fact, used illegal substances, we had to use this as a real teaching example for the level of responsibility that this former hero of his took for his own life. And it was a crushing blow to my son at that point that someone in the media presented as a hero, and my God, he had a baseball with his autograph on it, now lied and refused to take personal responsibility for his own actions, was such a disappointing blow. But it was a teaching example. It was an ability to say to my son, what kind of guy do you want to be? What would you have done if you did something wrong? Would you fess up? Would you take responsibility for it? And as a parent, that's really all I can try to do for my own son.
Well, you have done a wonderful job for us and all of our listeners. We are very delighted that Dr. Edward Farber, you've been able to be with us today to help us talk about teaching our children personal responsibility.
Sandy, Linda, thank you very much for having me.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Washington, D.C. with Kids. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address and mention show number 288. Spell anything that's not obvious if you could. That would be a big help to us. Tell us if you can what station you're listening to. Since we air all over the world, it's fun to know where you are tuning in. Our book, Washington, D.C. with Kids, is available in all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents' Perspective, visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org. That's www.parentsperspective.org. At the site, you can even hear a show at any time. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from the David Samuels High Fund of the Memphis Jewish Federation. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.